I don't believe in the devil, Satan, or demons. Horny little guys with pitchforks are the product of the imagination and have always been. I can understand the power and seemingly tangible presence of evil. I can also understand why some have molded their feelings about evil into a supernatural being. But in any literal sense, the devil doesn't exist. When we read that Mary Magdalene, whom we celebrate today, was afflicted by demons, we need to understand them as code for things and circumstances that restrict our spirit's freedom. Such demons might have been abusive men, societal sexism, or religious intolerance. The important thing is that Mary emerged from her past as a powerful woman and one of the preeminent apostles of the early church. In Holy Scripture, the devil is a literary device. It's a way of saying that those feelings or systems that we're in conflict with are powerful enough to seem like an actual being. The devil, though, has a history. It isn't just a harmless belief that can be left to the makers of horror movies. The devil's been used and is still being used to stigmatize those who, for whatever reason, are disliked. When a religious group decides that they and they alone have a monopoly on truth, they tend to smear their opponents as corrupted by the devil. It's the same phenomenon of building nationalistic spirit by creating an axis of evil. Whenever I hear a religious leader using devil language, I wait to hear whom he's aiming at. Will it be solo mums? Will it be gays? Will it be Jews? Will it be Muslims? Or will it this time be me? Dividing the world into black and white, right and wrong, my God and heretics, is bad enough without demonizing your opponents. For it's a short step between demonizing the opposition, making them less than human, and freeing our conscience to cage and mistreat them like laboratory rats. The odor of Auschwitz is never far away. The devil hasn't always been about. He seems to have popped up with the brand name Satan around 6th century BCE. In the book of Numbers and Job, Satan appears not as an evil seducer, but as one of God's obedient servants, an angel with an adversarial role. Think of a lawyer. Note he was a role, not a character. As a literary device, Satan's presence in a narrative could help account for unexpected obstacles or reversals of fortune. Take the story of Balaam, the man who decided to go where God had ordered him not. Balaam saddled his ass and set off. But in Numbers 22, God's anger was kindled, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the road as his Satan, i.e. as his obstructor or adversary. In the book of Job, Satan likewise has this role, with God authorizing Satan's testing of Job. However, around the same time that Job was written, other biblical writers began to use the concept of Satan to explain division in Israel. 1 Chronicles suggests that a supernatural foe had managed to infiltrate the house of David and lead the king into sin. These writers paint the Satan as sinister, and the role begins to change from Satan as God's agent to Satan as God's opponent. 4 centuries later, 168 CE, internal conflicts within Israel are even more acute. The problem was how to accommodate the cultural and religious traditions of foreigners who now lived in Israel. Some promoted tolerance and integration. others the opposite. This is the potency of our reading from Ruth this morning. Not that she was a faithful daughter-in-law, but that she was a Moabite, a foreigner. And this foreigner Moabite was the great granny of the revered King David. Yes, King David was not a pure blood, he was a mudblood. Satan became not just the enemy without foreigners, but also the enemy within fellow Jews. Separatist groups constructed stories of Satan's origin, one of the more common ones being that he was a princely angel who through lust or arrogance fell from grace. Of course, other Jewish writers try to stem the tide of racist and religious xenophobia. Daniel, for example, while concerned about ethnic identity, never uses Satan language to demonize his opponents. We come to the Christian scriptures. While the Gospels were undoubtedly affected by the views of religious separatists, they by and large depicted Satan not as a servant of God, but as a force subverting the will of God. Mark writes the devil into the opening scenes of the Gospel and goes on to characterize Jesus' ministry as a continual struggle between God's spirit and Satan's demons. In particular, Mark downplays Roman responsibility for Jesus' execution and instead names Jesus' Jewish opponents, fired by Satan, as the real culprits. This deadly mix of blaming Jews for killing Jesus and then characterizing them as servants of Satan has continued down through the ages in anti-Semitic literature and acts of violence towards the Jewish community. Matthew and Luke largely followed Mark's lead, escalating the conflict with Jesus' opponents to the level of cosmic war. These opponents were the enemy within, the Pharisees. And this reaches a crescendo in John's Gospel. Satan is incarnated in Judas Iscariot, then in the Jewish authorities, and finally in those he simply calls the Jews. The Gospel reflects the increasing conflict between groups of Jesus' followers and their opponents between 68 and 120 CE. The division of the divine sphere into goodies versus baddies has continued down to the present day. Christians first demonized Jews, then pagans, then dissident Christians called heretics, then independent women labeled witches, and so on and on and on. Last week, a correspondent to my blog told me that my dismissal of a literal devil was proof that my words came from the devil himself. This is a time-tested way of plugging one's ears to truth other than one's own. It's also, though, a strange experience to be labeled a spokesman for the devil. Like a scene from The Crucible, nothing I can say can counter it. Theologically, of course, Jews and Christians are monotheists. There's only one God. Read our creeds. There's not a good God and a bad God. There's no cosmic war with God and the angelic armies on one side and the devil and demonic hordes on the other. Apocalyptic literature created such a war to fortify its own position. Nowadays, such thinking should be left to J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter. Within the Christian scriptures, thank God, there's also more healthy ways of understanding one's opponents. Think of Matthew's text in chapter 5 about leaving your gift at the altar and going and reconciling with your brother or sister. Or the famous text about loving your enemies. St. Paul, too, was big on reconciliation. Many Christians from the first century through St. Francis in the 13th to Martin Luther King in the 20th have believed they stood on God's side without having to demonize their opponents. Their religious vision inspired them to oppose policies and powers they regarded as evil, while praying for the reconciliation, not the damnation, of those who opposed them. Sadly, though, for the most part over the centuries, Christians have taught and acted upon the belief that their enemies are evil and beyond redemption. Now, maybe more than ever before, we need to learn how to respond to our opponents firmly but respectfully, robustly but hospitably, ever aware of the dignity of each and every human being and the limitations of our own knowledge and opinions. Then the devil and his demons might be exorcised for good, and the world a much better place.